Hey everyone, welcome to the Golfers Journal podcast brought to you by Titleist, the number one ball in golf. My name's Tom Coyne. I'm a senior writer at the Golfers Journal. Thanks for joining us again. We've got some great stuff this week. Going to be talking some golf in New York, which is quite appropriate with the PGA Championship right around the corner at Bethpage. And remember, when golfing in New York or elsewhere, the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X have been redesigned for more speed, more precision, more consistency. So I'll be tackling Bethpage myself in a few weeks, and I wouldn't do so with any other ball than my Titleist, that is for sure. But as you're watching the Byron Nelson this week, and you're marveling at the incredible course, we've got some really cool news for you. Golfers Journal subscribers can play it this September. The second annual Broken Tee Two-Man is going to be at Trinity Forest on September 30th. Now, the entire Golfers Journal family is going to be there. The edit team, I think I'm going to be there. Sponsors, surprise guests. It's a really cool chance to meet everyone associated with the magazine and play this ridiculous golf course. There are a limited number of spaces, so please do sign up now if you're interested, and you should be interested. Go to the events tab at golfersjournal.com. Sign up there. And when you're on the events tab there, take a peek at the Punta Mita meetup that we're doing this November in Mexico. I'm definitely going to that. It's going to be awesome. 4 days golf relaxation. And I've heard it's selling out pretty quickly. So if you're going to go, don't wait. Do get signed up for that as soon as you can. So next week, the PGA Championship at Bethpage Black on Long Island. You know, the world's going to be buzzing about this tournament. Tiger going for the second major of the season. And there's going to be a lot of talk about golf in New York. And we wanted to talk about golf in New York, but not the Long Island tracks, those celebrated legends of American golf history. We wanted to talk the New York golf that New Yorkers play with a real New Yorker. And we found one in Paul Gutkowski, an actor and improv artist, a New York City teacher. You might know him from the videos on Scratch TV. Paul is a genuine New York linksman, golfing at the Everyman tracks around the boroughs. And today he's going to share with us some insights into the golf life of New York denizens. He's also absolutely hilarious, so I think you're really going to enjoy the essay he wrote for us about the golf life in the Big Apple and that he's going to share with us in just a moment. First, I want to take a minute to thank you, the listeners and subscribers to the Golfers Journal. We really appreciate it. You let us do what we do. And exciting news, Golfers Journal number 8, it's dropping soon, so stay posted by your mailbox that most exciting day of the season. When that envelope arrives, it's just around the corner. Also want to thank the sponsors from the pages of the Golfers Journal. That would be Link Soul, Scotty Cameron, Titleist, Oakley, New York Private Bank and Trust, and Links and Kings. Remember to follow us at Golfers Journal and follow me at Coyne Writer. And now, let's take a trip to New York with my friend Paul, who not only knows where to play in New York, but more importantly, who to play with. So I'm here with my friend Paul Gutkowski. Paul, how are you?
I'm well. How are you, Tom?
I'm outstanding. If you don't know Paul, Paul is an actor, comedian, improv guy, also a teacher. Where do you teach, Paul?
I teach theater in New York City public schools, actually an alternative high school. When a kid kind of flames out of traditional school and ends up going to an alternative school to try and get his or her diploma, I teach in those schools.
Fantastic. So some of our listeners will know you from Scratch TV, for sure, where you've been doing some really, really cool stuff. I was recently watching the 17th at Sawgrass. Tell people what you were doing there.
I basically dressed up as a marshal, donned the official TPC Sawgrass marshal uniform, and had a clipboard, which is the ultimate sign of authority.
I saw the clipboard. That was serious, dude.
Which was really used just to stash an extra mic.
Oh.
And as groups came up from 16, I would tell them that they were not allowed to play the hole for various reasons. And sadly, some of my favorite lines got cut. I started running out of realistic excuses. You know, we would say that pros were coming up. People believed that one. We started telling people that there was a wood stork, a rare bird, had nested and laid an egg at the hole. People actually believed that. We started like to see what we could push. I started telling people that a celebrity named Guy Ferrari was coming to shoot some sort of promo with Jimmy Buffet. And that, at that point, people would just stop listening. As soon as they heard they couldn't play the hole, they would stop listening and just start yelling at me.
It's hilarious to watch the reactions from people. I mean, people were pissed, rightly so.
Yeah, I felt terrible. I mean, I will say this is probably a good place to do it. I haven't really told anybody this. Everybody's pretty good sport. There were a few guys who were genuinely super pissed off.
Yeah.
It's not funny. It never was. 95% of the guys and gals would be like, oh, this is great. It's funny. And I actually think they kind of helped ease their own anxiety about that shot.
Right.
That they'd kind of laughed it off. And it's like, all right, well, I'm going to go hit this shot. I think for most people, I like to think it actually helped them loosen up after they went through it. There was one group that came through and they were taking a million photos in the little landing there between 16 and 17. And we were like, oh, this is perfect. Like the more invested they were in the hole, the more we would fuck with them. And they came up. I did my spiel. I'm so sorry. Can't let you go out. We got a group of pros coming to practice. And one of the guys immediately started crying. And I said, oh my God. Uh-oh. And he said, I'm here to honor the memory of my father who passed away 2 weeks ago. And laid this heavy, heavy thing. I gave him a huge hug. He kind of like collapsed in my arms.
Oh my God.
And I said, well, you guys obviously have to hit away. You guys, I'll make a call. Don't worry about it. Take some time. Let your kid hit. Let your buddy hit. And then, you know, you can hit away. He brings me over to his cart. He's got a picture of his dad with a high finish on the tee box at 17. And apparently he had come like 2 feet from holing out.
Oh, dude.
It was taken the weekend of this guy's sister's wedding. It was just this big memory in the family. So the guy gets his composure. You know, I'm like rubbing the guy's back. You know, I'm giving the guy a massage. I'm like, you got to just cool out. You got to take some deep breaths.
Yeah. And meanwhile, I haven't told him that, like.
I never told him. He hit away. He put it like dead center.
Oh, good.
And
good.
He gave me a huge hug. And then he starts thanking me for letting him play through.
Oh, man. That is so awkward.
Like, and I feel, and I'm like, oh. And so right after that, a huge storm came through. I was up with the guys who were producing the thing. I was shaking and I was like, I don't know if I can go back out there. What are we doing here? But of course I went back out and we ended up getting some of the better stuff afterwards.
Oh my gosh, that's so awkward. And you're in the bit. Now you're committed. You've got to stay in it.
I was praying that this guy never sees this video.
Well, if he listens to the Golfers Journal podcast, you know, we're glad it worked out. Hey, he hit the green, so all is well that ends well.
I think he made three.
Yeah, so. And you made it actually a little more special, you know? So
that's what I figured. He would tell the story to his wife. Oh, my God.
They weren't going to let us play.
They almost let us play. Yeah. And then I met this beautiful man named Paul, the marshal, who let me swing away, who ended up being some jerk-off actor.
Right, exactly.
The Dax Shepard of the golf world.
That's what the golf world's always needed. And so you're entertaining us on Scratch. You do improv in New York. You're used to performing. So we thought we'd do something a little bit different for our podcast here. I'm just going to literally turn the mic over to you. I've got a big trip coming up. I'm going to be playing golf all over America, all 50 states for this book, A Course Called America. Pre-order now. When I get to New York City, you've given me some great advice. I mean, you live in Brooklyn, so you know the New York scene really well. It's a scene I don't know, and our listeners might not either. But I know you've got some great stories from golf in New York, and I just wanted to give you a chance to share them with us and you know, have a couple laughs with you.
Yeah, it sounds great. Since we talked about doing this, I've gone down a little bit of memory lane of my New York City golf experience.
So all right, folks. Well, so for one night only on the Golfers Journal podcast, Paul Gutkowski.
I remember the 9:30 show is completely different than the 7:30 show. This is a story about playing golf in New York City. It's a story about friendship. It's a story about how during a round of golf in 2006, I became, for one magical day, a man named Richie Lugo. And you're probably asking yourself, who the fuck is Richie Lugo? Well, we'll get into that. But first, we got to talk about golf in the Big Apple. The five boroughs are home to over a dozen municipal tracks, including the first public golf course to open in the United States, Van Cortlandt, up in the Bronx, which opened in 1895. The newest addition to public play in the city is Trump Golf Links at Ferry Point, which is also in the Bronx, but at nearly 200 clams around, it's cross prohibitive for most New York City residents. I haven't played it and probably never will, you know, for obvious socio-political reasons. I moved to the East Village in 2003 under the guise of attending grad school, but really just wanted an excuse to live in the greatest city in the world. I had spent the two previous years living in the homogeneous sunshine of San Diego, which is a golfer's paradise. I lived a long iron shot away from Torrey Pines, probably the greatest municipal golf course in the country. And I played it as often as I could, but in hindsight, not nearly enough. When I moved east, I assumed part of the deal was giving up my golf game in exchange for the vast cultural dreamscape of New York City bars, restaurants, and museums. And I was ready to hang up my sticks. from now on, a good walk spoiled would only be if I got mugged by some gutter punk in Tompkins Square Park. But thankfully, that never happened. And fortunately, I very quickly realized the city actually had a thriving municipal golf scene. Like munis across the country, if you had the will to play and an ID proving you were a city resident, you could play a ton of cheap, interesting golf. At Torrey, that meant getting up at 4 a.m. to line up your bag in front of the clubhouse to hold your spot while you snuck in a few more Z's in your car. In New York City, it means battling throngs of strap hangers as you haul your clubs to the end of the outer borough earth on local subway trains. Dyker Beach is the second to last stop on the R train in Brooklyn. Van Cortlandt is literally the northernmost stop on the New York City subway. In many ways, playing golf in New York City reflects what it feels like living here. The city will try and beat you down, testing your frustration tolerance along the way, and the golf is no different. A 6.5 hour round at Dyker on a Saturday feels eerily similar to a stalled 6 train on your Wednesday morning commute. Dealing with the surly old retired cops moonlighting as starters and marshals across the city requires the same level of tact needed to successfully order a steak from the waiter at Peter Luger's. Hell, just getting a decent tea time feels like hailing a cab at rush hour in the rain. But I didn't care. I was hooked. Just as I fell in love with the bars on Avenue B, I became equally smitten with the munis of New York City. My first love was La Tourette on Staten Island. Yes, Staten Island. The Mississippi of the five boroughs. Until I discovered the rolling hills of La Tourette, the only reason I traveled to the home of Wu-Tang was to get to Jersey and to do it as fast as humanly possible. But La Tourette captured a big old piece of this American boy's heart. We lovingly referred to it as the toilet, but that in no way reflected how we actually felt about the course. It was gorgeous and well-maintained, and the clubhouse is a beautiful old mansion dating back to 1870. Most importantly, it was ours. It felt like our little secret. You need a car to get there, and I had one. Well, you know, most New Yorkers don't. This kept the crowds out. And sure, you were super likely to get paired up with an off-duty fireman and his punk kid wearing a wife beater and mesh shorts, but they were part of the fabric of the island, their course. Sadly, in 2006, on the eve of the U.S. Open, the New York Times featured an article comparing the grass at La Tourette to that at Winged Foot, and they ran it on the front page of the sports section. While the comparison was a stretch, every hack in the tri-state headed post-haste for the toilet, and our hidden gem was no more. My next affair was with Dyker Beach in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. Nestled in the shadows of the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, and only a 15-minute drive from my apartment in Park Slope, it became my go-to course, especially for weekday golf. It gets the most traffic of any of the courses in the city, and you could read Infinite Jest cover to cover in the time it takes to play 18 on a Sunday. While I shot my career low of 82 at Dyker, I quickly became disenchanted with the starters, a cadre of mostly toothless retired municipal workers who would bump you in a heartbeat to let their buddy Tommy or Joey or Sully tee off ahead of you. So I took my love to Forest Park in Queens, a lovely little track just off the Jackie Robinson Parkway. Forest is part of a larger park designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, the same guy who designed Central Park. And with its tight tree-lined layout, it feels like a stroll in the park. At Forest Park, you are much more likely to get paired up with a pillar of the Korean business community than a guy who looks like an extra on The Sopranos. Forest Park and I built something strong, sturdy, but ultimately things got a little stale. Just as our relationship was heading for sleeping in separate bed stage, I was swept off my feet by an unlikely suitor. When I moved to the city, the first course I played was Marine Park in the deep marshlands of Brooklyn, and woof, it was a total dog track. Flat, overgrown, and severely neglected, I vowed to never waste my time playing there again. But in 2009, the father-son team of Michael and Adam Giordano and architect Stephen Kay took over the Robert Trent Jones Senior Design and started building something beautiful. 10 years later, the results are undeniable. Redesigned fairways featuring berms, mounds, and fescue give the course character, highlighting the natural landscapes of the surrounding Jamaica Bay. I could watch the international jumbo jets fly low overhead on their descent into Kennedy all day, and nothing beats a post-round dip in the hipster Riviera, aka Rockaway Beach. Plus, I heard the mob is heavily invested in the renovations, which is kind of cool. Throw in a distant view of Gotham City skyline and you've got Marine Park, my new home course. While I adore the warm breezes of Marine Park, it is not the home of my greatest city golf experience. That honor goes to Split Rock Golf Course in the Bronx, a course I've only played once because, quite frankly, it's a pain in the ass to get to. It's basically Connecticut. But in the spring of 2006, I was working for a nonprofit that provided reentry services to young men detained on Rikers Island, New York City's jail. Basically, I would meet them a few times in the jail before they got released to figure out what they were going to do when they got out. And hopefully that included working with our program, which provided vocational training, education, and mental health services. Part of the hook to get them to sign up was we guaranteed them a ride home off the island, which is a huge draw. See, when you get discharged from Rikers, they drop you off at Queensboro Plaza with a single ride Metro card and the clothes on your back. You get locked up in July and released in January, you're pretty fucked. So on a balmy Friday morning in May, I headed out to the island at 5 a.m. to pick up my kid and drive him home. He lived in Co-op City, a massive housing complex on the banks of the Hutchinson River, just across from Pelham Bay Park, home of Split Rock and Pelham Bay golf courses. That was an unwritten rule at our small staff. When you did a Rikers pickup, finished the drop-off, you were done for the day. So with my workday done, I headed over to the shared clubhouse and got paired up with a threesome that was already on the box at one. The guy in the pro shop insisted I join the group, even though they were already hitting away. When I got up to the tee, the guys looked at me the way you look at a single who's been thrust upon your group last minute, with pure and utter disdain. But I teed it up and hit a decent drive down the left side, and we were off. On the walk up the second fairway, one of the guys offered me a Frosty Coors Light from his BYO cooler, an olive branch to the single. I was good. By the time we got to the par 3 fourth hole, we were starting to get pretty chummy. I quickly learned the three guys I was paired up with were lifelong best friends born and raised in the Bronx, who were all straight out of Central Casting. There was Anthony, tall, dark, but not exactly handsome Italian-American fellow who sold medical equipment. And then there was Tommy, a ginger Irish-American firefighter. And finally, Hector, Puerto Rican gentleman who had recently retired from the MTA. I also learned that these guys have been playing Split Rock and Pelham Bay together every Friday for the last 15 years, and that this was the first time they had played since their regular fourth and other childhood best friend, Richie Lugo, had moved to West Palm. As we prepared to tee off on four, Hector asked me if I smoked reefer as Anthony pulled a joint from a cigarette pack. Now, I smoked a ton of grass between the ages of 16 and 24, but I had recently stopped as it was starting to lose its charm for me. Getting stoned meant getting anxious, but I figured these guys were fun and my work week was done. So I said, "I sure do." Hector, with a Cheshire Cat grin, turned to Anthony and said, "Spark that motherfucker up." And Anthony did, and passed it around. When it got to me, I took a pretty sizable tug and immediately started coughing up a lung. Hector quickly came to my rescue, pulling a bottle of vitamin water from his bag. I grabbed the bottle and took a massive swig, only to realize it was not lemonade, as advertised, but some sort of homemade hooch Hector had concocted himself. They all belly laughed while I got my wits. I put my 8-iron into the carpool lane of I-95, which runs parallel to the hole. On the next hole, I realized these guys were gambling, and while I don't know exactly how much, I knew the stakes were high. Ball breaking increased exponentially after the J on 4. All three guys hit killer drives on 5 while I was in the throes of an existential crisis in the right rough. It became clear that they had pushed the first few holes and that the next approach shot was a big one. Tommy went first and put it on the back edge. Anthony pulled it slightly and it ended up in the greenside bunker. Hector hit to what this day was one of the purest 7-irons I've ever seen to about 2 feet. Hector gave a tiger fist pump before letting out a thunderous, "Da-da-da! Da-da-da! Top play, motherfucker!" He tapped in for birdie and won the first 5 holes. The guys were all laughing along. At the turn, I bought a 6er for the group. We were becoming fast friends. On 10, they started calling me the new Richie, the Richie number 2. I was honored. I started to feel like we were best friends. On 14, they insisted we call the real Richie to tell him that he had already been replaced. Hector pulled out his flip phone and dialed Richie, who picked up on the first ring, knowing that his best buds would be out on the course. "You've been replaced," Tommy screamed into the phone. "And it only took a week," added Anthony. Hector then shoved the phone in my face. "Say hello to your replacement." I was tongue-tied. I mean, what do you possibly say to the real Richie Lugo? I mumbled some sort of combination of thank you and I'm sorry, and then the moment passed. We finished up about 18, and I can honestly say I have no idea what I shot that day. I'm guessing somewhere around the century mark. We all shook hands. Hector hugged me and exchanged numbers and promised that we would stay in touch, and that would be their new Richie every Friday. I said I was in, and in the moment, I truly meant it. But I never texted or called, and they never reached out. It was a singular experience and had to stay that way. As I started to make the long walk back to the parking lot, Hector pulled up next to me in his cart and said, "Hey, Richie number two, hop on." I climbed onto the back of his cart and we rode into the midday sunset. It was the happiest I had ever been on a golf course.